Welcome to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services, a show about coping with getting older ourselves and dealing with our aging parents. If you have questions about how to cope with these stresses, call Scott at 877-960-9960. Now, here's Scott.
Welcome, everybody. How are you tonight? Welcome to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. I am so excited about tonight's show. Wherever you are, whether you're on 95.9 in the Palm Beaches, 106.9 on the Treasure Coast, tonight's show is going to fill you with the kind of information that you, frankly, probably have been waiting to hear. And if you haven't, you should have been. We're going to talk about vaccines, and we're going to talk about COVID. We're going to talk about them separately and together because one does not talk about one without the other. I'm fortunate to have an amazing physician here tonight who, amongst other things, is the chair of the Infection Control Committee at JFK Hospital. Dr. Klepper de Almeida is here, and I'm going to get to Dr. De Almeida in just a minute. But first, I hope everybody had a happy Passover. I know I did. It was wonderful. It was great to be with my family. And maybe if you've been vaccinated for the first time in a year, you had the opportunity to spend some time with your family. I hope that's true. Of course, if Passover is not your holiday and Good Friday and Easter are, that's coming up this week. And since I won't get a chance to talk to you before Easter Sunday, I want to wish everybody a happy Easter. I know how important a holiday it is, and I hope, as it was with Passover, if you've been fortunate enough to have a number of people in your family vaccinated, that you will be able to get together for the first time in a very long time. And I know how exciting that is because it was for me myself on Saturday night. But in an effort not to waste too much time, I want to get to my guest because, frankly, I have a lot more to talk to him about than I have the time to talk to him. So let me tell you a little bit about Klepper de Almeida. He grew up in Brazil and graduated from the Federal University of Bahia. I think I pronounced that right, Bahia, in Bahia, Brazil. He did his residency in internal medicine at Medical College of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, and his fellowship in infectious diseases at Northwestern University in Chicago. Thereafter, he went for a research fellowship at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health, where he studied the infectious complications of bone marrow transplant recipients. He was a member of the faculty at Drexel University Medical School in Philadelphia until moving to Palm Beach County in 2005 to begin private practice. He is an affiliated assistant professor of medicine at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine and coordinates the infectious diseases rotations at the University of Miami Internal Medicine Residency Program at JFK Medical Center, the first of its kind in Palm Beach County. He has held many leadership positions in the hospitals where he is affiliated. Currently, he is the chairman of the Infection Control Committee at JFK Medical Center and co-chairman of the Council of Advocacy and Legislation of the Palm Beach County Medical Society, where he is also a board member. He remains in private practice as an infectious disease specialist, and I'm going to give you all a chance to know how to reach him before the end of the show, so get your pencils ready. So he remains an infectious disease specialist and internal medicine physician. Dr. De Almeida, thank you for coming and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Scott. It is a pleasure to be here. It's wonderful to be reaching your audience, which is composed of folks that are true leaders. They're leaders in their families. And it is a time that we need tried and true leadership to guide us through these difficult times, particularly this past year.
And let's start there because this has kind of been an amazing year. I mean, it is really just a year ago that COVID was a word that we first learned. We had no idea what we were in for. We've had many peaks, some valleys, a lot of information, disinformation. It's been a wild year, hasn't it?
It's been a crazy year. I think we began with the news out of China and later the news from Europe that suggested something that was not totally unexpected, but the dimension of it was difficult for us to to live with. We knew very early that this was a disease, this was an infection that had no, did not select any groups. It infected everybody, but it particularly was terrible, was more difficult for folks of advanced age. So the risk of having terrible outcomes was almost, it was actually not even a linear relationship, but almost an exponential relationship with the older one was. That created these groups that we later used to decide who would be vaccinated first. But that was something that we had not really seen before with other respiratory viral infections. Historically, we know that the influenza, which was the other respiratory viral infection that we use as an anchor, kind of as a comparison, we knew that it was worse usually for folks older than 65, and therefore we, you know, focused our efforts on vaccination on folks over the age of 65. We knew that it was influenza worse for pregnant women, for folks that have a higher BMI, folks that are larger than perhaps what they should be. But the magnitude of COVID on those same groups was so much greater.
It was an exponential growth pattern, right? I mean, it was crazy. And if I'm not mistaken, the other thing I think that surprised us, listening to you, what surprised us was with how easy this transmitted. This seemed to be, to me, as a non-expert, it seemed to transmit just so easily.
Very easily. And the one trick that SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID, has that we had not seen commonly was this ability to transmit before people had symptoms.
Right.
So it was very difficult to identify who was a potential threat, who was a potential carrier of the virus, who could be transmitting. And that makes the job of public health so much more difficult, because you have to assume and presume that everybody is potentially infectious.
So we didn't talk about this, but, you know, there's been a lot of in the news, certainly today, about Dr. Birx and Dr. Redfield the day before or 2 days before. And I'm not sure that to me it matters, but to some people it seems to matter. Does it matter, or second, asked differently, why would it matter to figure out where this came from, if it came from bat transmission to human or if it fell out of a test tube in a laboratory? Is it that important to understand that?
For us in the front lines, it isn't.
Right.
I think there is a geopolitical question there that is very important and that might galvanize blocks of countries to mount a response and to hold certain, you know, world entities, hold them responsible for the response, which a lot of us would considered that it was slow from the World Health Organization. It took them a long time to declare this a pandemic.
Right.
And we had an idea, actually, very early in January. There was already a pandemic, and by the features of how it spread, or how it spreads, one would not need to be very well versed in how diseases propagate to realize that, you know, the rabbit was out of the hat already.
Yeah.
And that we were going to have a significant problem.
Right.
I think we hopefully will have learned some lessons as to how to deal with these circumstances in the future.
Right.
I mean, this past year brought us so much emotional pain, seeing our friends and family get infected, the anxiety of not knowing whether they were going to make through the infection, the mourning for those who passed away from the infection, and for everybody else, particularly our younger folks who are active in the workplace, the disruption, the economic disruption that it caused in the entire world.
Right. So moving from what happened, which I guess we'll, you know, you can't be where you are today without understanding what happened. If we move to today, where so many people are being vaccinated in the state of Florida, somewhere in the area of 70% of people over the age of 65 have had at least one vaccination, somewhere closing in on 50% have had two. Vaccinations across the country are expanding, plus there's the built-in immunity of people who have had COVID, and so we think we're approaching further down the road, and we'll get to herd immunity before the end of the show. So there's a lot of hope. There's a lot of positive things going on. We're going to talk about all of the things that we can now do that we couldn't do before. And yet at the same time, Dr. DeAlmeida, cases are suddenly exploding again, or certainly growing at a clip faster than people either expected. Maybe you are not surprised, but people like me are surprised. Cases are growing. Hospitalizations are starting to grow again. Deaths are flat, not going up or down, but they're not going down for sure. What's going on?
I think it's if we reflect back to February, March of 2020, we are forgetting all that transpassed in 2020.
Right.
We are calling a victory a little bit too soon. We will be victorious against this virus, but in order for us to really be victorious, we'll have to have a significant amount of our population immunized, whether they got immunized from natural infection or whether they're getting immunized, whether they're getting defense against the COVID infection from a vaccine. Now, in Florida, we are at about 28% of Floridians have received at least one dose of the vaccine. The number in folks that are older than 65 is much greater, and that's important because it's the group that suffers the most if they contract the infection. But we are still far from the numbers that we need to reach before we declare a victory, before we abandon the public health measures that we have been talking about for an entire year, which I will repeat again just to remind folks, which is to avoid crowded places, avoid particularly crowded closed places, wash your hands frequently, and wear a mask whenever you are in public. So until we get to a number of vaccinated individuals, and if you're going to a place where you do not know if the other folks have been vaccinated, protect yourself. Even if I would say wearing a mask is not such a big deal.
Right.
So, and we have gotten used to wearing these masks. So let's all keep wearing our masks. Let's not be so bold as to be regretful, remorseful if we catch an infection. It's the analogy, the sports analogy for those who like football. It's the end of the fourth quarter. Your team has a lead, but don't just abandon the game and until the buzzer goes off.
There is this dichotomy that we're living through now, which, you know, you and I talked about before the show. Those people who are outside, 6 feet apart, who wear a mask, particularly when most of the people are likely to have been vaccinated, but we don't know who has and who has not. We're not wearing signs that say that these days. There is a huge difference between being outside in the fresh air, like at a golf tournament or even walking down the street, as opposed to being indoors, not wearing a mask in a crowded place where there's not enough ventilation, right?
Absolutely.
There's a huge difference there.
Absolutely, absolutely. What the data now shows is that if you want to create the conditions that will foster propagation of this virus, you put people in a closed area and you have them talk to each other, eat or drink, because it's you cannot eat or drink without wearing a mask, right? While wearing a mask.
Right.
I'm sorry. So that is the perfect storm scenario. Now, can we avoid that? Absolutely, you can avoid. If we need to go to a place to eat and drink, let's favor being outside still until most of our folks are vaccinated. Now, when we are on the beach, when we are on the pool, when we are on a golf tournament, on a golf course, or outside where there's ample ventilation, where there's sunlight shining, and where we can, you know, most people when they are outside, they're not, you know, on top of each other unless they, you know, right, are lovers, etc. But
it's a family show, Doc.
Well, right. Partners.
You never
they
know. Right, right.
But otherwise, other than that, if you're just having a conversation, it's natural that we will keep a little bit of a distance. And the data also has confirmed that that is not the place where people are contracting the infection.
Right. Yeah. So while we're in this yin yang of getting, you know, cases rising, but so are the number of people that are vaccinated and those that have had it, is there, clearly you have said this, and I guess it is bears repeating, right? Wear a mask, stay 6 feet apart where possible, and avoid large crowds.
And perhaps not even the 6 feet.
Right.
We can afford to be, you know, last week the CDC came and after studying and obtaining data from schools, decrease the distance that a student needs to be from each other, from one another to 3 feet.
Right.
And I think if we are outside, we those 3 feet would be sufficient, would be enough to decrease or eliminate the possibility of transmission.
Right.
So the situation really that we should still try to avoid, try to stay away from, are closed places with AC going on where one cannot wear a mask.
Right.
If you're in closed places and you can wear a mask, just make sure it's not a crowded place where there will be, you know, a greater risk of people there being infected by the virus, and if so, being, you know, spreading the virus around. But other than that, I think as we vaccinate more and more of our citizens, we'll be free from the constraints that we have asked everybody to observe, to abide to for this past year and fraction.
Have we scared people too much in some respects, or have we unduly frightened people, or in some cases have we done the opposite?
I think that there were a bunch of folks that said that even if you wear a mask, even if you've been fully vaccinated, you still cannot do X, Y, and Z. And what we should be focusing on, really, just to flip the page, if you allow me the metaphor, is to focus on what can you do if you've been fully vaccinated. So if you've been fully vaccinated, you can gather with your friends who have been fully vaccinated and your family and share a meal and share Passover and share Easter. If you've been fully vaccinated, you are mostly protected. And sociologically, I mean, when we're talking about how societies behave, it's important that we don't yet declare victory, but we know that if we work together to galvanize folks to stimulate, to incentivize folks to come out of their homes and be vaccinated, particularly our younger population, to whom hopefully our elders still remain a figure of authority by leading by example. And
right.
And if their elders have been vaccinated, then they can question the younger, their next generation, who are the folks in the labor market, and say, go get a vaccine.
Right.
And then your grandchildren that are going to college, please get vaccinated. And by doing that, move our needle from 27-28% of vaccinated individuals in Florida to 65-80% of folks vaccinated in Florida by the end of May or by mid-June. And once we achieve that, we will see our number of new cases in Florida really come crashing down. Today, over the past week, we are averaging about 5,000 new cases per day in Florida. In Palm Beach County, about 350 new cases per day. I'd like Florida's number to be in the double digits, to be, if not that, on the single digits.
Right.
And then at that point, we will all be able to remove our masks collectively.
Right. If you're just tuning in, of course, this is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. I'm here tonight with Dr. Klepper D'Almeida, who is he's the chairman of the he has so much I want to tell you that he does. He is chairman of the Infection Control Committee at JFK Medical Center. Of course, we are talking about COVID and vaccines, so we have so much more to bring you. And I'm thrilled that you are having the opportunity to hear Dr. D'Almeida educate us on the truth about what's going on with this disease. If you have questions for Dr. D'Almeida or for myself, you can reach us at 877-960-9960. That's 877-960-9960.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys are proud to be a family-owned and operated business.
That's right, Mike. It's myself and my husband, Tino, my sister, Melissa, and her husband, Joe, and my parents, Irene and Scott Greenberg. As you can tell by six family members being able to work together, family is extremely important to us. Our clients often have kids that live out of state or even overseas, and those extended family members want to have the comfort of being able to contact a family member at any time to follow up on how mom or dad is doing. While you are able to reach a family member at any time, our office staff is truly part of our extended family. They monitor the phones 24/7 in case of an emergency and are empowered to make decisions that are in the best interest of the client, because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines the quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or visit our website at palmbeach.comfortcare.com. That's palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As your parents get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared?
Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. ElderCare 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and resources to assist you and your loved ones with their daily activities of living with healthcare challenges.
As a patient advocate, ElderCare 360 brings together a team of patient-focused, caring professionals with decades of experience. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800.
Make ElderCare 360 part of your team. ElderCare 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
Hi, I'm Laura Oliveris, the president of Silver Solutions, the senior-focused home services company. Unfortunately, COVID-19 continues to be a reality for too many of us. But thankfully, every day, more and more of our older adults are getting protected by the vaccine. At Silver Solutions, we pride ourselves on protecting older adults as well, from safety improvements to downsizing to emptying the home after the loss of your loved one. Silver Solutions is here to help you move forward with ease and confidence. To find out more, call us today at 877-AGE-SAFE. That's 877-AGE-SAFE. Or visit us online at silversolutions.com. Our team is bonded, insured, and follows rigorous CDC guidelines, including the full use of PPE. Life can bring the unexpected, but when it comes to making growing older safer and less stressful, you can count on us, Silver Solutions.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. We're thrilled that you're with us. If you're here on 95.9 in the Palm Beaches, we're excited that you are tuning in. And, of course, the same is true at 106.9 on the Treasure Coast. At the end of the commercial break, I always tell people they can call in, and John has called in. John, welcome to the show. You have a question for Dr. D'Almeida?
Thank you so much, Scott. I love your show. I listen to it every Monday night.
Thank you.
Yeah, I do have a question. I've been in the process of trying to get my first vaccine shot. My daughter has been trying to book it for me online. And then I found out from the Oldies channel here that there's an alternative, site with the AstraZeneca vaccine. And, you know, I was given the locations. But then I've been seeing stuff on the phone that have been kind of conflicting with what I've heard, all kinds of misinformation. So it's kind of disheartening. You see, you get a good thing, hey, we got an alternative location, and then you hear something negative. And so about 3 weeks ago, a famous person died, Marvin Hagler. And I think it's 4 weeks ago this weekend. And, when I heard that, I just said, whoa. Okay, so it seems like every time you're ready to do something, you hear about another thing in the news about somebody dying. So I'm saying, wait a minute. I got to figure out what the proper vaccine is for me because, a lot of people are starting to realize, hey, I better find out. There's a lot of them out there. Which one do I do?
Well, I think that's a great question.
People that have allergies right. need to be concerned about that. That's my question.
All right. Well, John, you got a bunch of great questions in there, and I'm going to let the doctor answer it. I will tell you this, and I'm sure the doctor will say this. The AstraZeneca vaccine is not approved in the United States yet. The Johnson & Johnson is, but AstraZeneca is not. But as opposed to which vaccine is best for you and how and why you can get it, I'm going to let the doctor answer. Go ahead, doctor.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for your questions, John. You might find, it's important for us to make, to separate vaccines that are being offered on a research basis, and there might be sites still researching the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine in Palm Beach County and in Martin County. So now that is separate from the vaccines that have been authorized by the FDA. And they were purchased by us, the American people, and they are being given to us for free in these sites, in these pharmacies, or sites put up by the our counties.
Right, right. It's put up by the county. Right, an additional site beyond, public supermarkets.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But it's important to realize that in these sites, there are only three vaccines that are available. They are the Pfizer BioNTech
Pfizer,
vaccine.
Right.
The Moderna vaccine, and the Johnson & Johnson or Janssen vaccine. So these are the three vaccines that are available for us in the United States. And guess what? We are fortunate to have the three best vaccines in the world as far as level of protection. So the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines, they protect us to the estimated percentage is about 95% against severe disease. The food and the CDC just came out with some information today that suggests that against infection, period, is about 90% after the second dose of either Pfizer or Moderna vaccine. So these are absolutely ecstatic numbers that we never.
Well, I, heard it even, I've even heard a higher percentage. I think it was even somewhere between 90 and 95 as far as an effective percentage.
Yeah, so that is against severe disease, and the 90% is against getting any infection whatsoever. So is
90% the gold standard here? In other words, if we're talking about 90%, is that the best we can expect here on a percentage of effectiveness?
No. So, it depends on what we define as being effective. If we define as being effective preventing people from going to the hospital, the number is 95%. If we define as being as not catching COVID, the number is 90%. So there's still about a 10% of folks that develop an infection, even if they've been vaccinated. Out of these 10%, 95% will not have an infection, an ailment that is significant enough for them to go to the hospital.
I've had allergies most of my life.
John, I'm gonna have to, John.
I've outgrown them, so I don't have allergies today. Pretty much, I've conquered them by moving to a warmer climate.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be going to my primary doctor tomorrow. My new primary doctor, and I'm going to go over a few of these things.
Yeah, John, I'm going to have to, John.
I'll see what he can freshen me up right on in terms of, you know, up-to-date information beyond, you know, in addition to what you just told me, okay?
John, I'm going to have to move on, but I will follow up on some of these questions. We have other people waiting to, and including me, who have questions for the doctor. So I'm going to move on, but I wish you good luck and stay tuned, and thanks for being a loyal listener. I appreciate it. So, doctor, if we can, I do want to touch on one thing that John raised, which I think was really important, which is safety of the vaccines. There are people who have some concerns about safety, and I think that's a legitimate question.
Oh, indeed. I think John raised very good points. As far as folks with allergies, so we noticed that there were a little bit higher number than what folks had when they got the placebo in the studies of anaphylactic reactions. And what are anaphylactic reactions? Anaphylactic reactions are very serious allergic reactions. Now, they happened mostly with the Pfizer vaccine, much less with the Moderna vaccine. But, and there is a very important point to be made, it only happened in people that had a history of having these anaphylactic reactions before. And who are those people? You know who you are. You carry with yourself an EpiPen.
My grandson.
So it won't come as a surprise to you that you will have such allergic reaction.
Yeah. And the correlation between people dying in this vaccine being caused by the vaccine is almost non-existent. I know there's a lot of news out there, but none of it's really true.
No confirmed cases of death tied to the vaccine. And what we can tell folks is that your chances of dying if you catch COVID and have been vaccinated approach zero.
Zero, right.
So this is a vaccine that will prevent you from dying from COVID the moment you are fully vaccinated.
So, again, I want to get into the vaccines because, again, John raised that, and it's part of what I had a conversation about and I feel strongly about. But one thing I want to get to, so much of what we hear about is politics, right? It's all politics. You know, there's red state governors and blue state governors, and there's this state is doing great and that state's doing awful. The truth is Florida has been reasonably open, and yet our numbers are really not any worse than some of the other places. We have had much fewer restrictions than some of the more restrictive states, and yet our numbers are comparable. Why?
There are several factors that we still have to sort out on a scientific basis. And these factors are confounded by other outside issues. Most states that have done well and that have not had this surge that occurred during the winter, were states that were warmer.
Right.
States where people can get together outside, that people are not obliged to be in a closed space to tolerate the weather. And we happen to be one of such states. And perhaps because of that, we didn't suffer a greater impact from having an open economy or somewhat open economy. When we compare, and we still don't have very good data, but I'm sure folks will be crunching the data of transmissibility of the virus or number of new cases and have as a guide the average temperature of the geographic area, we might find an explanation for why Florida stayed with a stable level of transmission, while the numbers went higher in some other states when they relaxed the public health measures.
So the jury is still out, and we're going to learn a lot more as things go.
Correct.
So to shift gears just a bit, one of the things, again, that are kind of anti-vaccine proponents is that this came to market so quickly. These vaccines came so quickly. But I know that you feel that this is really a miracle of science. Can we talk about that?
Absolutely. And I think we have a lot of thanks to give to the prior administration for really making this possible. And how did they make this possible? They made it possible by putting phases of development of a vaccine that are usually done in sequence and making them run in parallel. So first of all, we, the American people, went out to all these companies and told them, produce your vaccines, we will buy your vaccines regardlessly whether they work or do not work. So we waged a very good bet that ended up being beneficial to us and beneficial to Moderna and to Pfizer and to Johnson & Johnson at this point, but mostly beneficial to our society, because that is our ticket to having our economy back at full speed. It is very noteworthy to mention that none of the steps that are commonly employed in the evaluation of a vaccine, none of them were not done. So all of the safety precautions that the FDA requires of companies when they are developing vaccines, all of them were observed. I would say that the FDA went one step beyond, which is to announce back in June of last year what the bar was for a vaccine to be considered as a product that would be used in the American population. The FDA asked that these companies enroll large numbers of people. I mean, these vaccines, the amount of folks that are involved that were research subjects for these vaccines are 100,000 people.
Right.
These were very large studies, 30,000 for Moderna, 40,000 for Pfizer, 40,000 for Johnson & Johnson. And why are these numbers important? Because if we were going to notice a significant side effect, it would be noticed. All side effects were taken into account, and folks that are curious enough can go to the FDA webpage and get access to the documents. These are public documents. These are in the public domain. Anybody could peruse them. And every single side effect needs to be accounted for, needs to be taken into consideration. Now, in all these studies, there was a placebo group. And the importance of having a placebo group is you realize that certain things just happen because it's life. So, you know, folks will get into car accidents during the year or 2 years that they are participating as research subjects. But we are interested in knowing if more car accidents happen in folks that took the vaccine versus folks that didn't take the vaccine. More heart attacks happen in folks that took the vaccine versus folks that didn't take the vaccine. More strokes, more back pains, more whatever symptom. And we know that these events, if they occur more often in one group than the other group, will be events that happened in at least one out of 15,000 people. So it gives us great comfort.
Confidence.
And confidence that the products are safe.
Yeah, it is a miracle of science. If you're just tuning in, it's Scott Greenberg. Oh my God, I'm getting older, so is my mom. Doing a show tonight that I have been waiting to do, and I can't thank my guest enough for agreeing to be here. Dr. Klepper de Almeida is here, and he is the chairman of the Infection Control Committee at JFK Medical Center, an infectious disease specialist, and we're talking about COVID, and we're talking about vaccines, and I wish I had more time. I dropped one of the commercial breaks because I have so much more to ask him. But if you have questions for him, you too can ask. All you have to do is call 877-960-9960. That's 877-960-9960.
Hi, I'm Dan Lagani, the CEO of Silver Solutions, the senior-focused company that works like a family for all of your mom and dad's home-related needs as they age, from keeping them safely in their current home to managing a downsizing or relocation to assisted living to emptying a home and distributing the family's treasures after the loss of a loved one. Silver Solutions is there to help families move forward with ease and confidence. If you're worried about your aging parents' safety at home, or you're an older adult concerned about losing your independence, give us a call today at 1-877-8 Age Safe. That's 1-877-AGESAFE. Or visit us online at silversolutions.com for a free consultation. We're bonded, insured, and follow rigorous CDC guidelines on all jobs, including the use of full PPE. You can't stop the aging process, but with Silver Solutions, you can make growing older safer and less stressful for the whole family.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As your parents get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared?
Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. ElderCare 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and resources to assist you and your loved ones with their daily activities of living with healthcare challenges.
As a patient advocate, ElderCare 360 brings together a team of patient-focused, caring professionals with decades of experience. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800.
Make ElderCare 360 part of your team. ElderCare 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Scott Greenberg from Comfort Care Senior Services. Scott, you're very involved when it comes to the senior community.
That's right, Mike. We firmly believe that involvement in the community, giving back to the community, comes back to us in many, many ways. One of the ways it comes back to us is in our understanding of what's going on, what's new, what's trending. So we're very involved in the guardianship community, for example. We're involved in Alzheimer's community care, in the Alzheimer's Association, in Parkinson's. We run support groups. Basically, what I'm saying is that we want to be a part of the community in ways that we just don't receive benefit, but that we can give benefit as well. It's very important for us to understand the needs of the entire community and the needs of other people who are providing services. It is only through that that we can ensure that we provide the best care possible. Remember, Mike, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines the quality of their life. So remember, let our family take care of your family and call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or look us up on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm thrilled that you are with us tonight. I'm just as thrilled that my guest is here, Dr. Klepper D. Almeida, who is, amongst other things, the chairman of the Infection Control Committee and an infectious disease specialist at JFK Medical Center. We're talking about all the things about COVID that you had questions about. If you have questions, of course, you can still call us, 877-960-9960. Dr. D'Almeida, I have so much to ask, but there are three vaccines out there today. There's, as you said before the break, there's the Pfizer BioNTech, there's the Moderna, there's the J&J. We know Sputnik has, that's the Russian vaccine, that's out there. AstraZeneca is around the world, although not approved here yet. The three that are here, is one preferable over the other? And how in the world are all of the vaccines performing?
So the three vaccines that are authorized for vaccination in the United States, they're excellent products, all three of them. There are some advantages and disadvantages to the separate vaccines. Obviously, everybody knows that the Pfizer vaccine requires to be stored in a very cold temperature, and that created a big disadvantage as far as distribution of the vaccine. But that vaccine is superb in terms of its efficacy in protecting folks against infection and in protecting folks against clinical illness related to COVID. The Moderna vaccine also requires some refrigeration, refrigeration that we have at home. It could be stored in one of our freezers for a very long period of time, inside our fridge for a month at a time once the vials are open. And that made it a better logistic situation for the country as we are trying to vaccinate 330 million individuals. Then comes the J&J, which is much easier to store, and to boot, it only takes one shot to get a level of protection that's about 80-some percent. The Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines require two shots, given 3 to 4 weeks apart, their point estimate as to protection is a little bit higher than the J&J, but again, it takes one going and being vaccinated twice. There might have a little more immediate side effects, meaning folks might get a little more, their arms might be a little sorer. They might get fevers more than what they would get if they get the J&J. But what I say to folks is the sore arm and the fevers we might have following the infections is the biological price we are paying for not dying of COVID.
Right.
So I think it's a nice way to frame that. I think it makes it very desirable to not die of COVID, and we'll pay this small price of perhaps feeling as if we had the flu for one day.
And it is fair to say that the J&J versus Moderna and Pfizer, they weren't tested the same way and in the same locations, and so the efficacy numbers, notwithstanding, they are still monumentally protective. And as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, that all of them give you virtually 100% guarantee that you're not going to die from this disease, and a very, very likely similar high percentage that you're not going to get severely ill and go into the hospital.
That is correct.
Yeah.
That is correct.
Yeah. So another question. Can we transmit the disease if we've been vaccinated?
So the data, we are still gathering data on that, but on the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, it seems that even if folks, so we know that it protects 90% against folks catching COVID. In that 10% of folks that catches COVID, it seems that the level of the amount of virus that they carry in their noses is so small that their ability to transmit to someone else is significantly reduced. Now, we're waiting on on good data, on more precise data, but the impression that scientists who are trying to get to that number have is that the vaccine, both vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna, are significantly impactful in decreasing transmission in those folks, that those rare folks, 10% of folks, that even if vaccinated, caught COVID. Yeah. On the J&J, we are not so advanced as far as knowing those numbers, but we expect that the reality will be similar to the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines.
So if you just tuned in, of course, this is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. If you're a regular listener, you know we're here every Monday night. If you're a new listener, we're here every Monday night from 6 to 7. We talk about issues that confront boomers and their parents. Tonight, of course, we're fortunate, extremely fortunate, to have Dr. Klepper de Almeida here talking about COVID disease and talking about vaccines. And we have a few minutes left, so we're not done. But if you're sorry because you tuned in late that you missed the beginning of the show, and if you tuned in late, you should be sorry because there was a lot of good information, I have great news for you. You can listen to the entire show anyway because we podcast. Yes, we do. We podcast tomorrow, up and running. OMG, I'm getting. You will find us. You will find tonight's show and every other show we've ever done, if you like. I don't know why you would, but if you would, you can find every other show. Of course, if podcasting is not your thing, and again, I totally get that because I'm not a podcaster, but many people are, you can go to my website, palmbeach.comfortcare.com. Comfortcare, ComfortCare. Don't put a T in there. It's likely that your spell check will force you to do that. Take it out, right? Comfort Care. PalmBeach.ComfortCare. ComfortCare.com. Of course, there is no excuse for you to ever tune in late because you can tune in wherever you are on the iHeartRadio app. Yes, all you have to do is search True Oldies in Palm Beach, and we'll be there on the iHeartRadio. And, of course, we simulcast. We do. True Oldies, FLA.com. I had a very exciting guest for next week who unfortunately this afternoon had to cancel. So I don't know what I'm doing next week, but I will have something exciting for you. But in 2 weeks, Dr. Tom Minas is going to be here. Dr. Minas is an orthopedic surgeon specializing in knees. He is really a very interesting physician. He's at the Paley Institute, which is one of the finest orthopedic locations in the South. And Dr. Minas himself has a long history, having been at Harvard for 25 years as their number one knee specialist. He does some interesting things in terms of regeneration of ligaments, but he also did my wife's knee replacement, and I can tell you, she never took a pain pill after his surgery, never once took a pain pill. So I'm excited that Dr. Minas is going to be here, and I'm sure you will be too. And we'll let you know about next week soon. Listen to the promos on the radio station. But in the time I have left, Dr. de Almeida, I should give you an opportunity to tell people how to reach you if they want to reach you for more information about their questions or your practice.
All right. So I have a practice of infectious disease that's mostly in
the hospital.
In the hospital.
Right.
And I have an internal medicine practice in West Palm Beach at the Ferris Building. Our number there is 561-655-8448. Again, 561-655-8448.
So, again, with so much around this disease, there's a lot of myths out there. There's a lot of things that people believe or don't believe, particularly if there is around treatment, right? We have some very efficacious treatments today that we didn't have 6 months ago, or somewhat efficacious, but we also have things that people believe were efficacious that are not. So in the few minutes we have left, can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so let me preface by saying that the best way to deal with COVID is to not catch it. And how you do that? You do that by getting your arm, getting yourself vaccinated, presenting your arm to someone who has a vaccine in a syringe. So that is the best way, second to none. The treatments we have developed are somewhat efficacious right now. So we have a medication called remdesivir, and there's some controversy as to when it should be used, how efficacious it is, if you use it early versus late. In the studies that were published and that led to the authorization and then approval to by the FDA, it did not decrease mortality. All it did was made people leave the hospitals if they were admitted a few days before the population that did not take remdesivir. The other medications are dexamethasone. The British taught us that. They had a very elegant study involving multiple sites, thousands of patients, that showed that dexamethasone significantly decreased people's chances or risk of dying from COVID if they needed oxygen. But that required, the benefit was only seen in people that required oxygen. It was not seen for folks that did not need to be on oxygen. There was actually a suggestion that it would be harmful, because medications have side effects, for folks that were not requiring oxygen. There was recently a medication called baricitinib and another medication called tocilizumab that were found to be somewhat helpful. And tocilizumab in folks that are extremely ill, requiring intensive care unit admission. And baricitinib is employed in a similar fashion as dexamethasone. And there's not been a head-to-head comparison to find out which one creates a best result or creates fewer side effects. So that's what we have that we know works against COVID. Now, we've also spent significant amount of time and effort and money studying other things that we now confirm that it would be very unlikely for them to work. One of the best studied medications against COVID is hydroxychloroquine. And we have studied hydroxychloroquine in several scenarios. We have given hydroxychloroquine to folks that were exposed to COVID. We have given hydroxychloroquine to folks that developed COVID. We have given hydroxychloroquine to hospitalized people, to people at home. And we have found out that in none of these situations it worked. There was a study out of Colombia addressing a medication called ivermectin, which also showed that it did not work. So those are the medications that have been best studied against COVID, and we know which ones work, which ones do not work. There are certain controversies still as far as medications to prevent blood clots, what's the right dose, etc. There was a big controversy initially in medications for blood pressure, if they had any role in COVID, and we confirmed that you should continue to take your blood pressure medications no matter what they are, that they will not protect you or put you at risk from COVID. Also medications that folks use to treat heartburn or gastric ulcer. And also known that they do not play any significant role.
So that Pepcid shortage was unnecessary.
Right.
Dr. De Almeida, I don't know how to thank you enough for being here tonight. You have been so generous with your time, both tonight and prior to the show, spending time with me preparing for tonight. There's so much information out there. There's so much confusion. You have done an unbelievable job in helping clear some of that up for so many people. I can't thank you enough. You're a wonderful guest. You're very generous. You're obviously doing a wonderful job in helping people and preventing people from coming down with this dreaded disease. I myself have lost some very close friends, right? I lost one of my closest friends, and I lost my father's wife. I mean, he's long gone, but his wife from here, and many of our clients and associates have struggled. You've been on the front lines. you're doing everything you can, and I just want to thank you for taking the time to be here. This is, of course, Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older, so is my mom. We're here every Monday night from 6 to 7. We talk about issues that confront boomers and their parents. Tonight, Dr. D'Almeida helped educate us on COVID. We have so much more ahead for you in the weeks to come. We hope that you'll stay with us. If you're a regular, thank you. If you're new, please come back. To the rest of you all, have a great week. Happy Passover, happy Easter, happy Good Friday, and we'll see you next week. Good night, all. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom.